do it.
Blog Talk Radio.
I would like to say, oh yeah. Oh yeah. Oh, oh, oh. Oh yeah. This exciting hour of power. African American Empowerment Association Saturday Empowerment Show for African Americans, Harvest Home, and a crew. Coming to you live once again, we got a great show for you today. Injustice, the hidden crisis, the Virginia prison, and much, much more. Y'all come on and join me now. It's African American family time, y'all. If you don't do nothing else, call me. That's what we do. Oh, yeah. Hey, yeah. Better love. Listen, folks, listen. There is no better love. There is no greater love than for self and kind. That's our creed over here at the African American Empowerment Association. It's nothing new, but that's what we need to learn for ourselves again, that there's no greater love in this world than for African American love for self and kind, because it was taken away from us. Simply was. And a different name, a different title, a different label. Right? A different everything, a different culture, a different religion. All of that was stripped away from us, and we've been given different titles. But we're coming back. It's a resurrection, and we're asking nobody to do anything for us. Now, you could kick us some dough. You could, right, to help us in the process. But we're recovering, and we need to help ourselves. We need to help each other help ourselves. And that's what the NAAEA is all about. So I'm going to slide on into the mission. The mission of the National African American Empowerment Association is to ensure, that means we got to make sure that the needs of every African American in this country is met, that we leave nobody behind, none at all, that we do the things necessary to repair, to recover, and to heal from the mental side, from the mental constructs that have been given to us that has taken us away from our true authentic selves and our authentic mind. I'm telling you, there's nothing wrong with that. How will we do that? We're going to develop programs and services that support, inspire, motivate, and empower each member, each person, wherever we are, right? And we're talking about doing that in every state around the 50 states and more, right? Wherever we are, every community, every town, we're going to do that. How? Through peace. We need peace in our communities. We do, right? Where we live. Right, we need to have safe streets, safe homes, safe environments, safe schools that our kids can go to, and opportunities that allow our people to grow. Listen to me, people. We need a political agenda to help our people, help ourselves. We need resources, right? We need support, and we need the political system to help us do that, right? We need to get out and understand the political system that is at work and be able to navigate that system, period, right? Trust me on that one. We need an economic agenda. We need to understand economics, the economic system, the capitalistic system that works with, for us, and even against us. And we got to understand how that money works and then move that money around our communities so that we can get the resources that we need to improve our communities. So we're not striving for survival, but we're striving to do the things that we need to do to build infrastructure for our communities. Next is the A. A is athletics, which is health, wellness, fitness, and nutrition. You can't go wrong with that because you got to take care of your temple. You do. You need mental health, physical health, emotional health, spiritual health, and we need to do that for ourselves, right? We need to get well again, and we need to heal. And so that holistic approach to mind, body, and spirit is what we need to develop. And we're talking about empowerment centers around to help us do that at every level that we're looking at, enjoying the fruits of our labor. Right, to help our people get healthier mentally, physically, emotionally. And next is culture. Relevant cultural programs like this one and many, many more to help us define and refine who we are, define ourselves, right? What's going on with us, and then be able to have solutions that benefit us, that support us, that work with us to do the things that we need to do. And lastly, a comprehensive education. A comprehensive education that really looks at every area. Every area within our lives, within the African-American experience that we can improve on. And as we do this, we will resurrect and promote and develop and instill a sense of pride, integrity, dignity, and respect for ourselves and others. And there's nothing wrong with that because we're learning how to love ourselves again. And so we're doing this as a process through empowerment every day of our lives. And that's it. And so that's what we're going to continue to do. And that's the work that needs to be done. To stay back in a moment. Be back in just a minute. Man, Stan, the deck is packed today. I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you.
Yeah, man, we got the deck.
I just love it when you're able to explain the pillars of the National African American Empowerment Association. You know, when we have institutions that define our own reality, quit trying to get in to fit in, this is where it's at, and this is what we're doing.
Boy, oh boy, do we need institutions that define our own reality for us that fit, right? I'm over here at a gun violence rally, basically, and our young people are talking about we need stuff to fit us, to work for us, right? Get the voice of your young people, understand what they think and what they feel, right? Ask them what's going on and what their experiences is, and then let's coalesce. Let's get together and work from the ground up. All right, now, it's the Willie Lynch and Kwanzaa segment coming up with Brother George. You know how I'm getting ready to do that. Oh, bring it, Brother George. Oh, bring it. Oh, yeah. Do it. Hey, mama. Be right here. Brother George, welcome to the show. How are you, brother?
I'm doing fine, brother. Thank you for asking. I that was a great opening, you know, that you gave today to the show. Today,
thank you, sir.
Our Kwanzaa principle is going to be Imani, to believe with all our heart in our parents, our teachers, our leaders, our people, and the righteousness and victory of our struggle. And this is a comment on the term Imani, which means faith. This far by faith, the faith of our mothers and fathers, Martin, Malcolm, Sojourner Truth, was not in images or doctrine, but in a personal relationship with a force that was greater than themselves, and yet was also within them. We each need to develop and strengthen our personal relationship with whatever we hold as a higher power in our lives, calling upon the great spiritual heritage of our mother continent to invigorate and sustain us all aspects of our being. And I think that that's a great principle, to have faith. Faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things unseen. In the Willie Lynch segment, I'm going to change up a little bit. I'm going to do something a little different, but I think it's definitely necessary. I'm going to read from a kid's book. This is one of my kids' books that I have for my grandkids. And it's called Black Heroes. And it's they got black heroes in here from Queen Nzinga to Martin Luther King to Malcolm X to Benjamin Banneker. And that's who I'm going to read from his section today. I'm going to read from Benjamin Banneker. Benjamin strongly believed that slavery should be abolished. In 1792, he wrote to future president Thomas Jefferson, who was at the time the Secretary of State, expressing his views. In his letter, he pointed out the injustice of white colonists in the United States wanting freedom from Britain while African Americans were enslaved. Benjamin also included a copy of his almanac to convince Jefferson that black people were capable of getting an education and achieving great things to benefit the country. Even though Jefferson was a slaveholder, he was impressed by Benjamin's achievements. Jefferson shared the almanac with others, and Benjamin gained the support of abolitionists in Maryland and Pennsylvania who helped him continue to publish his almanac. A lot of people don't know that Benjamin Banneker was the first one to write an almanac in this country. And so it's a multitude of things that we've done as a group of people to enhance the culture of this country. You know, so I just wanted to do that today, Brother Marvin, and it's back to you. I can't wait for our guests today.
All right. Well, you know, I got a question for you, brother. What do we need to do? You know, I always ask you to cultivate ourselves, right? Like you got a children's book. You're giving us information. What are the basic things that we need to learn to empower ourselves and to get back to where we belong?
Well, I think that the whole thing is anchored in knowing who we were before we got here and the things that our ancestors accomplished. Because I think that one of the brothers, I think it was Dr. Booker T. Coleman, he said that when a lie is told and the lie is told so good that the truth becomes unbelievable. And I think that our people, when our people hear the truth about our accomplishments, they don't believe it. They hear it and they want to believe it, but they don't believe it, because if we believed it, we would act on it. And so we would begin to act differently. We would begin to respect ourselves more, because we come from the most accomplished people on the planet. And that's not like an arrogant black nationalist statement. That's a fact. You know, so, brother, I said this before. We need to flood our children, you know, with positive information about who we are as a people. We need to distill all the information at them that we can as to who we are as a people, religious and otherwise. I hope that answers the question.
You got it. Thank you, Brother George. Thank you so much, sir. Great segment as always. And now let's get on with the show. We got this discussion today is going to be injustice, the hidden crisis in Virginia prisons, and we're going to bring some folk on that's going to educate you on that. So let me bring Sister Krista in. Sister Krista, I'm bringing you in, right? Oh, yeah. There. I don't see the sister. Brother George, are you there?
Yes, sir, I'm here.
All right, let me see if I can get Sister Krista back. I just saw her number on the panel. Her number just dropped. All right, so in the meantime, I'm going to see if I can get her back. But in the meantime, we're going to talk about the organization called Freedom Over Everything. Hopefully we can get her back in here to get the show started. And then we're going to talk to Brother Hassan about what's going on over there in our communities. And see, here's the thing, right? We are everywhere, right? And even though our people are experiencing incarceration, they're still our people, right? They're still our people. We need to make sure our people are good wherever they are. Let me see if I can bring Sister Krista in. Sister Krista, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
All right. Welcome to the show. How are you?
Good, good. How are you all?
Doing good.
We're doing fine. So we got a great show set up today. So this is about, again, African-American empowerment is about education, right? A comprehensive education that really speaks to what we need, wherever we are, because we got to take care of each other wherever we are. So Sister Krista, tell us about your organization. Tell us about the work that you all are doing, and then tell us about Brother Hassan, and then we'll bring him in to get the show started.
All right. So Freedom Over Everything is a nonprofit organization. It's established by three incarcerated citizens. Their names are Nadia Abdul-Salam, Kevin Dickerson, and Oliver Adams. They created this workshop behind the walls to make sure that they qualify each other for parole. The Department of Corrections during COVID had shut a lot of the programs down. The men had a lot of idle times on their hand. So Nadia saw fit to come up with a workshop to keep the men busy and just to be able to qualify themselves for parole. And called me and then asked me to spearhead it for boots on the ground on the outside. Hassan Shabazz is one of our members of Freedom Over Everything, along with 30 other brothers inside who have graduated from the program. And he is pretty much one of the guys that I use a lot to speak on behalf of Freedom Over Everything. With his knowledge of law and just knowledge of the things that's going on with behind the walls, it just keeps me and the people on the outside knowledgeable and with information so we'll know how to help from the outside.
Okay, and so we're talking about injustice, right? Cause, so there's an issue. And then we're going to speak to the hidden crisis in Virginia prisons, right, and what that really means. So as we set this show up, I want to set the callers and the listeners' minds up for what is actually happening inside of our prisons here in Virginia. And so we want to be able to share the experience, right, and we want to be able to have you as the listener to be compassionate about our people wherever they are. Right. And so the experience matters because wherever we are matters. Right. So imagine for a moment the people that we consider to be incarcerated or prisoners. You are actually one yourself. I know somebody going to be offended by that. But we didn't ask to come here. We were captives. Right. And so we are here and our ancestors have been here against their will. And so if you think about our brothers and sisters who are behind bars, imagine how your ancestors felt to be locked up and locked down and forced to be a source of labor for this country, right? And so I can identify, and I hope you can identify with the needs of your brothers and sisters who are inside of that system. So Sister Krista, you talked about how the brothers organize themselves. How long has Freedom Over Everything been in existence? And then let's see if we can get Brother Hassan on the line.
Okay, so it's been established since 2018. They have started their own nonprofit organization while incarcerated.
Right.
So, yeah.
All right, so imagine this, listeners. We got brothers that are working for themselves legally. They're organizing, right? Because you just don't lose your intelligence because you're going through process within the system. So we got brothers and sisters who are intelligent, who are articulate, but we still got to address the needs of our people no matter where they are. Sister Krista, is Brother Hassan ready to join us?
Not yet. No,
okay.
I don't. He didn't get on the line just yet.
Okay. All right. So just so y'all know, Brother Hassan is going to call us from an institution. Right. So you're going to have a live call when we can get him in, and he's going to talk about what is going on inside or behind the walls of the institutions and what you need to know about that. And then we'll talk about how we can support the needs of that community as it exists on the ground right now. So Sister Krista, while we got you and waiting for the brother to come in, how did you get involved and what would you like our audience to know about the process and the program as well?
Well, the program was, like I said, developed by the gentleman, and our overall mission for Freedom Over Everything is just to be able to be support, outside support for the guys coming home. Once they return into society, we want to be a plethora of resources, whether it is mental health,
mm-hmm.
plugging in jobs and careers, housing, being able to, and they too would like to just be rejoin society with the with their gifts and talents. Some of them are book writers, authors. Some of them have their own businesses that they've created. So what Freedom Over Everything does, we have a book bag to briefcase initiative where we help them get their LLC license. I just got the phone with a who wanted to trademark his patent his design into a trademark and then coin a phrase. So they have their own dreams, and a lot of times they have to come home and work a construction job, something that, you know, they already been wear and tear on their body for over 2 decades, and then have to come home and still work another 9 to 5. So me personally, that didn't set right with me. So I came up with the Book Bag to Briefcase initiative to allow them to dream their dreams and live out their dreams once they're home.
I like that. You said book bags to briefcases, and that's being able to transition brothers from one state of living to another to give them a really great start, right, as they return home or return to a community. So how did you get affiliated, and how can you best share the needs, and how can our community support the brothers and sisters in this project?
Most definitely, Freedom Over Everything has a website, freedomovereverything.org. And this is Brother Hassan calling in now, so hold on 1 second, I'm sorry.
All right. We got a treat for y'all today, right? This is the real empowerment right here, right? And so what we're going to do is take you inside right now and get you a bird's eye view of Freedom Over Everything. Brother Hassan is going to share with you, right? And then you'll be able to ask questions at doing the question and answer segment of the show. But again, we want to be able to, at every aspect, and listen, brothers and sisters, every juncture of African-American life needs to be
everything's great.
Under a microscope.
Yeah.
So we can see what's okay. Going on. Brother Hassan, how are you?
Oh, wow. I'm doing fine, brother. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. Well, thank you for joining us. Welcome to the show. It's African American Empowerment Saturday, right? And we are so happy to have you come and join us today. Tell us your story. Tell us about yourself and what we need to know about Freedom Over Everything and what's your mission and purpose and vision.
Okay. Well, one thing I can say is that, my name is Hassan Rashan Shabazz. I've been down for 23 years, which means I've been incarcerated for 23 years. I'm due to be released on Monday.
All right.
So that's a wonderful accomplishment for me or anyone having come through these dismal crypts.
All right.
For me, I've been an activist and an advocate the entire time I've been incarcerated. I am a certified paralegal. I've made many changes within the system. And in striving to do those things, I now am moving toward making a transition to free society. And with that being said, I plan on walking out backwards, never forgetting the comrades and the guys that I leave behind, right?
Right.
I've been working with Freedom Over Everything for over a year now. Shout out to Nadia and Katie, and of course all the other members of Freedom Over Everything, and of course when I first began associating with Freedom Over Everything, we were dealing with the issue of bringing back parole, but there are many other issues that need to be addressed, and so all of these things encompass what Freedom Over Everything is about, a holistic approach to dealing with prison reform and criminal justice reform. My journey toward prison advocacy started about 5 or 6 years ago when I myself, Ascari Donso, Margaret Breslow, and Phil Willado came together and founded the Virginia Prison Justice Network. And so that network has also been instrumental in moving toward progressive prison reform here in Virginia and criminal justice reform as well. I like to look at everything that I do as being holistic, and so I strive not to make this into any big I's and little U's. If you are about this work of liberation,
yes,
and freedom, right, then I'm with you. I'm for you, and anytime you call on
like
me,
that.
I'm going to be there. You know,
I like that.
That's because that's what we have to be, man. We're stronger together. One brick support the other,
yes,
and that's
sir.
What it's all about.
Brother Hassan.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. I would like for you to focus on, like, one area that, you know, the parole portion. I want you to focus on the parole portion and what Governor Youngkin did and all of that, if you don't mind.
Okay. Indeed. So I think that what everybody has previously been in the news, really in everybody's faces lately, has been House Bill 5148. And to understand House Bill 5148, which was dealing with good time credits and the credits that prisoners were striving to earn here in the Virginia system, we must kind of understand the history behind why all that came into play. So I want to bring people up to speed with kind of just giving them a glimpse into the past to understand how we got here today and then also how we have to move forward in the future.
I said you got time. Take your time.
All right. Well, then let me give it to you. All right, so what I want to do is I want to go back to the history of what we call truth in sentencing here in Virginia. A lot of people may not be aware of that, but truth in sentencing came about in the 90s, where if you notice what was going on back then, they had this big campaign toward super predators. And what they were saying was that we were nothing but super predators, the juveniles pretty much was who they were targeting back then, and saying that we were super predators, that there was no way that we could be rehabilitated. We were about nothing but crime, and so they came up with the crime bill. And this was about 1994, right? And the drafters of that bill was current President Joe Biden. He was one of the drafters. Also, Bill Clinton was the one who signed that into legislation. Now, truth in sentencing, right? Truth in sentencing dealt with three pillars. One was no parole. They wanted to abolish parole. The other was mandatory minimum sentences, which means that if the statute said that the minimum sentence you could get was 5 years on this charge, then the judge could not use his discretion to depart from that 5 years. Okay? So mandatory minimums was the second prong of truth in sentencing. The third prong of truth in sentencing was that all offenders would have to do 85% of their time. So what that meant was that in changing that law from what we call the old law, which was good conduct allowance, guys would go from earning 30 days for every 30 days served on good behavior to only 4.5 days for every 30 days served for good behavior. So these were the things that encompass what we call truth in sentencing, right? And because of this particular crime bill that they did, they would have to then fill up the prisons with individuals that they said could not be rehabilitated, could not be reformed, right? And they wanted to be tougher on crime. So we're going to penalize you. We want to be punitive. And we think that we can, in being punitive, we can set you on the right track. This was their philosophy. Okay, so what this resulted in was states striving to obtain funding from the federal government in order to incarcerate individuals at a higher rate. So what they did was, in order to obtain this funding, they started to target certain areas within that state, within their respective jurisdictions, in order to incarcerate as many people as they could so that they could gain the funding from the federal government. This also resulted in the militarization of the police department, because that was a part of the reward that they was getting for incarcerating individuals at these high rates. They got more equipment, they got more funding, and so forth, right? So just to give you a brief glimpse into that part of it, also what took place was the Anti-Terrorism and Effective Death Penalty Act, right? And so once you start to incarcerate these individuals, what they wanted to do was they wanted to put a limitation on how much time you had to challenge the conviction. So what the AEDPA, which is the Anti-Terrorism and Effective Death Penalty Act, did was it kept guys from being able to file for post-conviction relief after being incarcerated for a year. So that means that within 1 year, you had to strive to learn everything that you could about your charge, your crime, and then file a habeas corpus on it so that you could get released. All right. We know that that's virtually impossible for anybody to do what it takes a lawyer to do from 8 to 13 years worth of study to try to learn the law and then attack their conviction. So what that did was it legally worked to keep those super predators in prison. All right. Now, that being said, when this took place, the Virginia prison system morphed from a population of 18,000, and I'm talking about not just in prison, I'm talking about jails, local jails, facilities, regional jails, and so forth, from 18,000 people to now upwards towards 30 to 40,000 people. This caused mass incarceration that we see here in Virginia today. Now, let's fast forward from that up to where we are right now, right? When we're talking about House Bill 5148, how does this fit into what I was just telling you about the crime bill and truth in sentencing? Well, we've made many efforts over the past 20 years, right? Many efforts over the past 27 years, rather, to try to do something in either bringing parole back, bringing mandatory minimums, getting rid of mandatory minimums, and also dealing with good time. Well, we've kind of failed on the no parole. They've always shot no parole down. No, to bring back parole, they've always shot that down, so it proceeds to be no parole. They've always shot down the mandatory minimums, right? And so the only dent that we've been able to make in truth in sentencing has been to strive to get prisoners more good time, right? That's the only thing that we've been successful with. And then they try to take that away. All right, so let's get into that a little bit, right? All right. House Bill 5148 was a bill by Don Scott to where he wanted to at least strive to give guys a little bit more incentive and reward for good conduct in prison. And so what he tried to do was take it from being 4.5 days that you earn for good conduct for every 30 days to upwards to 15 days for every 30 days, all right? Now, I want to make this known to everybody because I've been hearing a lot about not wanting to let violent prisoners out, not wanting to let people go, right? We want people to do their sentence, and that's what it is. Listen, good time has nothing to do with the crime that you committed. That's not what good time is. Good time is essentially a reward for your conduct in prison, for you showing that you have been rehabilitated. That's what good time is about. Good time is not about rewarding you or just giving me something because you say that I deserve it. No, I have to earn good time. And in the same way that I earn good time can be taken away from me. If I do wrong in prison, I can go down to earning no days, 0 days for every 30 days. But the max that I've been able to earn since I've been in prison is 4.5 days for every 30 days that I've served. All right? So let's get that straight, because we don't need to feed into that propaganda about giving good time just automatically releases prisoners. No, if you ain't been doing right, you don't get the good time to begin with. And so if we've been rehabilitated and we show that we've been rehabilitated, then that's what the good time is for. And the public should support that because it is incentive toward rehabilitation. All right. Now, that being said, when Don Scott put this bill forth, it was immediately met with resistance, right? But it still was passed by all blue governorship, Senate, and House. And this was passed in 2020. It was signed into legislation on November the 9th, 2020, in a special session, and this was done by then-Governor Ralph Northam. Okay, so what that means is guys have literally been waiting for this bill to go into effect for over a year and a half, almost 2 years, right? But to go into effect for over a year and a half, guys have been waiting for this good time. At least we're saying, man, we finally did it, man. We finally showed them that we're worth it. You know, maybe somebody is taking notice. Maybe they really do care. This was the mentality of the guys around me. Like, oh, man, I'm going to get everything in order, man. I'm going to make sure that I do right. Some guys who hadn't been doing right, they said, oh, man, I got to get my act together because I want to earn this good time too. And so that's what was going on for over the past year and a half here in prison. And so this law would go into effect on July the 1st, 2022, right? Now, I told you before that over the past 27 years, there really hasn't been no change toward prison reform here in Virginia, right, since 1995. There hasn't been no change, right? All guys have been able to do was earn 4.5 days for every 30 days, and that really hasn't provided any incentive for guys, right? Now, Virginia boasts that it has the lowest recidivism rate in the country, right? And I would say, yeah, well, maybe that may be true. I can't tell you the numbers right off, but that's what they say. Well, then, in my mind, having been incarcerated for the past 23 years, I want to know how in the world you think that you feel that you are the reason for that, right? Because I remember that when there was no reentry programs, there was no rehabilitative programs of the nature in which they have right now here in the system. The only thing that I could point to that actually caused guys to reform themselves was older guys who had been locked down for a long time, who were eligible for parole, and they began to provide mentorship to the younger guys coming into the prison, right? That's what I got. I didn't get progressive reentry. I didn't get intensive reentry. My intensive reentry was brothers like Geronimo, brothers like Brother Willie X. Brown, right? This was my intensive reentry. Brothers like Hashim Khan, brothers like Elmo X, that was my reentry. And it was through the programs that they did. It was through their own self-help programs that helped me to become the person that I am today, right? And so with that being said, I understand Virginia saying that they owe that to the reentry program and so forth like that. But what I can do is I can say this. Without the prisoners, those programs don't work. So when you put people into position that are about rehabilitation, that are about reform, then your program can work. But other than that, it will not. And so what I see going on is a lot of us leaving the system, right? A lot of the older guys are leaving the system now. And so what does that leave the younger guys that are still in here when they don't have any more mentors? When they don't have any more incentive to even build or participate in the programs that you have? Well, what's going to happen is it's going to become pandemonium in here, right? It's going to become a free-for-all in here. You're going to be having a system that's filled with guys who have a lot of time, right? And what you're going to do is throughout their whole tenure, they're going to act accordingly, do their bid, right, their incarceration the way that they want to, and then in the last 6 months to a year of their incarceration, you're going to put them in a reentry program and think that's supposed to reverse the conduct and the effect that that prison has had upon them for the past 15, 16, 20 years, right? It won't happen. And what's going to happen is, without the proper incentive to reform and rehabilitate, and with no parole, right, what you're going to be doing is you're going to end up releasing guys back into the public that are worse off than when they first came in here. This is the problem, right? This is the problem that I have with anybody who feels like that you can punish an individual into reform or rehabilitation, right? You can't do it. It doesn't work that way, right? You, if your child, right, is acting up and doing wrong, and you do nothing but beat them, punish them, and whip them, right? And you're totally punitive, but you don't approach it with no level of empathy, no level of understanding why your child did this so that you can show him the right way, then that child will in turn...
You have 1 minute remaining.
That child will in turn resent you, and you probably won't be able to influence that child to go down the right path because they don't want to hear nothing you got to say, right? You ain't did nothing but beat me and whip me.
Right.
Why in the world should I feel like you really love me, right? And so with that being said, I will call right back. And, you know, this is prison, so this is what we got to do. But I'll call right back, and we can proceed, right?
Yes, sir. All right. Thank you, brother. Thank you, brother. Wow, you're listening live to Brother Hassan Shabazz, right?
Shabazz.
He is incarcerated.
Thank you for using GTL.
Incarcerated. He's calling you live, right? So we got a live show going right now. He's going to call right back. But listen to what's going on, right? And I want you to pay attention to the money trail, right? Because our people are still being used for the financial means of other people. You got to understand what this system is all about. Remember I talked to y'all about education, right? This is a great education on how they're using our people as resources to continue to be a resource for somebody else, right? If you look at enslavement and then you look at this, it's another system, right? It's that system that continues. It's an economic system, right? That's why we got to understand the economic system. All right, so we're going to try to get Brother Hassan in, and we're coming up on the question and answer period at the top of the hour. So again, it's a great show. If you got questions, 845-277-9250. I'm going to say it real slow. So if you got questions for the brother, 845-277-9250. Call in. Ask a question. I know you got to be curious about this, right? The brother is talking about some real good stuff. He's talking about the limitations that are created to keep our people incarcerated, right? And this is not black people, but you know who the majority of the people are. African Americans are the ones who are behind bars by an alarming rate. And we got to understand that. So we have to create strategies that's going to help support and get behind these things that continue to support our people. Brother Hassan, are you back?
Yes, sir. I'm back. I'm here.
All right. Welcome back. Great stuff. You just keep right on going. Great information. I'm going to ask you a question real quick. So you talked about the limitations on parole, and the piece that you left off on was so important about being punitive, right? And so if you set a mindset up, right, to be dysfunctional with no structure, like you talked about the mentorship leaving, and you got a bunch of young brothers with no support and no system of support in place for true rehabilitation, and you talked about self-help. How do we begin to change that tide to get brothers and sisters what they need so when they come out, they're ready to rejoin us and be productive members of our communities?
Well, I'm going to tell you, first and foremost, I would say this. I said when it comes down to the reentry aspect of what it is inside a prison, what I've learned is that most of the guys, right, who were here as mentors, who were here working and striving to build those programs and work in those programs and be mentors to tell guys, listen, man, I've been in here 20 or 30 years, man, you don't want to be me, right? I've been in here 15 or 20 years, you don't want to be me, right? Now that those guys have gone on, many of them having made parole. Why? They made parole because the entire time they were in here, they were striving to reform themselves so they could make parole. See? Mm. They were striving to reform themselves and build programs so that they could show, man, look, I'm worthy. I'm ready for society. This
I'm
is
right.
what I'm bringing to the table. This is what I strive to do. And they did that because they had incentive to do it. Why? Because, man, I don't want to be in here forever. I'm going to strive to do whatever I can to show them that I ain't the old me. Right? Hmm. And so parole and those things incentivize guys to work hard to show the parole board, see, this is what I'm about right here. This is what I'm about. Now, when you take that away, right, and you take the extraordinary, you take the good time away, good conduct allowance was what it was. Guys could earn 30 days for every 30 days served, which means literally if you serve a year, you can get a year off your sentence if you were reforming yourself, right?
Right.
And if you mess up at any given time, guess what? They take all of it away.
Mm.
All the good time that you earn, you get it's taken. It's done, right? You got to fight and work to get that back. So guys were saying, man, I don't want to. That's why you had guys who ain't had a charge in 30-some years. You got because some guys said, man, I'm not losing my good time for nothing. I don't care who you are. I'm not losing my good time. And so these guys sought to work. Got guys like Brother Infinite Allah and Brother Wally El Shabazz and all the brothers that I know that were very instrumental in working and creating their own programs. Brother Keshmo, brothers that was in here that I know that were working and doing programs before programs even came to Virginia. Right? And so, and they was doing it themselves within the pod, and they'd gather some brothers up and say, man, come on over here, man. Sit down for a minute. Let's go over this right here. Or they might do it in the Nation of Islam class or do it in the knowledge group, right? And they'll bring brothers in and say, man, we're going to do self-help right here. We're not going to wait on them, right? Well, now those guys are gone. So how do we then incentivize a new generation to follow in their footsteps, right? And what better way to do that than what incentivized them? Parole. Good time. Give a man something to work toward so he can work toward not only his freedom but his rehabilitation so you don't have a worse creature come home than when that originally came to prison to begin with. Right?
True.
And so that's the key. You know, I think you always, you know, You know the age old adage, you know, you get more bees with honey than, you know, the other thing, right?
Right.
And so where's the honey?
You got that right.
Right? And then you might be able to see some bees come out and work. Right?
Mm-hmm.
But the bees right now are just dormant because they ain't feeling like they got nothing to work for. So this man, I'm just gonna do my time, sit like an out on the log, and but the time gonna do me. And I'm going to sit like an out on a log until my time is up. Well, we got to change that, right? We got to change that. And so we're going to get a little bit more into that when we start talking about legislation and how we can make those changes. But what I do want to do is I want to go back to this House Bill 5148 because it all ties in together, right? It all ties in together. And what I really want to talk about is because after they passed it, trust and believe, there were many individuals who didn't like the fact that we was being given anything. And I can name them. One of them was Delegate Robert Bale, who's always been against the good time law, right? And when after this bill got passed, and I believe it was March of this year, 2022, it had been passed for a year and a half. In this session of this year, Robert Bell, he proposed House Bill 735. House Bill 735 was a bill to repeal the good time. Now, you trying to repeal a good time law that ain't even went into effect yet, man.
Wow.
Like, in my mind, what you saying is, I ain't giving them a chance. I ain't even going to give them a chance to show that they worth it. Or that show that they worthy, right? But, and guess what? It's a bigger reason than that, too. We're going to get into that in a minute, too. We're going to get into that, too, right? Because I'm going to touch on it in a minute. But what I wanted to do was say that he proposed that bill, and that bill failed. The Senate held strong, and the Senate said, no, we're not going to repeal anything. We haven't even put it into effect yet. So he failed, right? Then in March, the DOC began notifying all the guys who would be getting out between July 1st and August the 30th that they needed to get their home plans in order, right? That they needed to get their home plans in order. And so guys was happy, man. Guys was like, yo, I'm getting ready to go home. I'm notifying my family, you know, my children. Some of the parents were elderly. Like, guys are saying, man, I think I'm gonna make it to see my mom or my pops, because I ain't know if I was going to see it without this good time, man. They might pass away before I get there. And so guys were happy about it, man. They were being notified, and home plans were being put together. And that was from March to June. All right. On June 1st, Robert Bell, once again, Delegate Robert Bell, once again, tried at the beginning of the budget session. And the budget session comes into effect on June 1st for everybody that's not aware of the political process here in Virginia. The budget session always comes in around June, right? And when they come in, they're discussing the budget, and amendments can be made to any bill because funding has to be appropriated toward however we're going to implement this bill, right? And so anyway, he proposes at the beginning of the budget session to eliminate the good time again, but this time, he's only striving to do it for mixed charges. And when I say mixed charges, what I mean by that, everybody, is that let's say a person has a robbery, which is considered to be a violent crime, right? And you cannot get good time for the robbery. And then he has a possession charge, right? Let's say just possession of marijuana or possession of drugs, something like that, right? Mm-hmm. That is a nonviolent charge. He could get the good time for his nonviolent charge, but not for his violent charge. And so all the guys who had mixed charges were receiving their good time, because the bill didn't say if you had any violent charge, you couldn't get good time for your nonviolent charge. The bill specifically just said if you have a charge that is not on this prohibited section of the bill, then you can get the good time for it. So this amounted to about, they say the numbers are around 600, but I think it's more, the first number that I heard was about 1,000. So let's say anywhere from 600 to 1,000 guys had mixed charges, right?
Right.
And these were guys that had been notified that you about to go home, right? Well, Robert Bell introduced that bill, and it got shot down again. So he failed twice. Right? He failed twice. So that means that the Senate held strong, because, you know, the Republicans still have the House. And so even though the bill might make it through the House, the Democrats held strong in the Senate. So they was not going to allow them to pass a bill that had not yet went into effect. Man, no, we're not going to do that. We're going to go ahead and give it to these guys, because we done notified them, their families and everything. We're going to give them the good time. Well, wouldn't you know, right, about 3 weeks later, well, probably two weeks and a few days later, right, on June the 17th, 2022, Governor Youngkin, our present governor right now, added an amendment to the good time bill. And his amendment to the good time bill was that he wanted them to eliminate all mixed charges. Right? This is at the end of the budget session now. So
right.
Robert Bell failed twice, right? Y'all follow me. Robert Bell failed twice. And
right.
Then at the end of the budget session, Governor Glenn Youngkin, he then proposes that same amendment that Robert Bell proposed at the beginning. Now, on 6/17/2022, eliminated mixed charges was passed in the Senate, 22 votes yes, and 17 votes no. Now, as soon as I saw that, right, as soon as I saw that, immediately my mind went through the process of deducing that the only way this bill could have passed is that somebody who voted no earlier changed their vote.
Yep.
Right? They flip-flopped.
Yep.
So somebody in the Senate, we don't know who they were yet, but we can find out, right?
Right.
But somebody in the Senate who voted no earlier against that amendment, against that bill, changed their vote, and they voted yes. Now,
right.
For everybody out there who may not understand politics or how dirty a game it is, right, it's always a give and take, right? It's always somebody willing to sell out to get something that they want, right, and forget everybody else, right, that is going to be affected by what you do. If I can't get what I want, right, then ain't nobody going to get what they want. So I'm going to sell. What I'm going to do is I'm going to sacrifice this right here so I can get this over here. It's a trade-off, right?
Right.
It's a trade-off. And they do it all the time in politics, right? They talk every day like, okay, well, you give me that, I'll give you this. And so obviously mixed charges was up, right? Mixed charges was up in the air, and that's exactly what took place. And so then, right after that, they begin to notify people, right? They begin to notify people that that you're not eligible no more, right?
Right.
That you're not eligible no more, man. And when I saw that, you know, I literally saw the warden, the institutional programs manager, and the psychologist come around on a Saturday morning when they never at work.
Right.
They came in on a Saturday morning and called all those guys out to in their respective pods and told those guys that they wasn't going to get that good time. And that was one of the most heartbreaking things for a lot of those guys who thought that they were on their way home to see their loved ones, having made arrangements and everything, and then having that stripped from them like that. And it still affects me, you know, because I'm going home, and it's sad to know that a lot of those guys won't be, you know. And so, you know, it's rough. It's rough to even internalizing that and striving to channel that into talking to you about it right now. It still gets me a little choked up because it's been rough. That's been a rough thing in here, and people don't understand
right.
how it affects guys. But I'm telling you, it leaves a bad taste in your mouth, man. And so it's something that we have to do about that. But I will say this. There has been public outrage, right? There has been public
yes.
outrage. I've watched people mobilizing out there. I saw the rally on TV last week that was out there in Glen Allen at Echo Lake Park. Very proud of the fact that we had representatives there from all different factions, from Ignite Justice and 40 Strong, upon which I am also a member of 40 Strong, which was chosen of 40 individuals within the prison system that had been active behind the walls. I also FOE most definitely was there. Everybody that is doing work, that has done work, and for all of you, right, Ms. K at RIHD, you know, Renee and Casey at Humanity Behind Bars, Bakura Shabazz at CIRN, Criminal Injustice Reform Network, everybody that's been doing the good work of striving to make a change, I just want to thank all of you for actually stepping up to the plate and doing something and speaking out about it and coming out and really showing solidarity and unity, because that's really what's needed more than anything right now. And I know that there's some lawsuits that's being filed. And so hopefully with that being said, you know, we can make some changes, man, and make the changes that need to be made, you know, And you know, that's really the gist of what I wanted to say to everybody today. You know, I know that you were saying that there's going to be a time for question and answer.
Yes, sir.
You know, if that's possible, you know, we can get it on, man. I invite any questions that people may have right now.
Well, just before we get to that,
okay,
could you tell us how we on the outside can help to manage what's going on the inside? If you get what I'm saying, how can we? What is it? Anything we can do to prevent the brothers from being so frustrated that they, you know, cause themselves more problems than what they already have?
I would say this. I would say that when it comes down to that, I think first and foremost, what you're doing today is one of the things that you have to do, right? Is that
okay.
people have to become more educated on the issues, right?
Right.
Don't just think that everything just gonna be all right. You know, somebody gonna get it done. You know, we got organizations out there. No, I believe that everybody is affected by mass incarceration, and so
correct.
Everybody should know a little bit of something about it, and it's a concern that you should have. Because the guys that are in here, one day are going to be free, right? I come home on Monday, right? I come home on Monday, and I'm going to be driving down the street beside many of you, at the store with you, at the movie
mm-hmm.
theater, right? At the mall.
Right.
I'm going to be there. And you might not even know who I am because you may have never seen my face, right? But the fact remains is I'm still there. And so what I want people to know is that just because you don't see it or you don't recognize it don't mean it doesn't exist. And so
right.
I want people to be more educated on the issues first and foremost, right? The second thing that people can do is start to really reach out and support these activists.
You have 1 minute remaining.
You have to reach out and support the organizations. Once you're a little bit more abreast upon the issue, right? And if you're not, reach out to these organizations that are there because they will help educate you, right? They will help to educate you. And in doing that, what you do is you're showing support in ways where you might not really understand that you just being a supporter, how valuable that is toward the organizations that are really striving to do this work. Right, that's one of the other ways that you can do it, and then what we'll do is I'll answer the rest of this I'll call right back and I'll answer the rest of this question. All right.
Okay. All right.
Thank you for using GTL.
Sister Christy, you still there?
Yeah. I am. I hope that I know it was a lot of information, but most definitely you got to dissect through it. I'm glad this is ordered for people to go back and listen to again at their leisure because the information.
Well, we're going to try and get y'all back, you know, within a month or so. You know, we already have programs scheduled, you know, in advance. But we're going to try to get y'all back in about 4 weeks so that, you know, because I really want him to be able to fully, you know, educate us. And I could tell that he was rushing because he had a lot of detailed information, a lot of facts. And we need to know those things, you know. And, you know, so we're going to bring y'all back. We're not going to try. We're going to bring y'all back so that we can have a part two. And, and he can, you know, y'all can go back in it again and pick up where you left off at and have another hour and a half, you know, to make it work. And by that time, to be free, you know, so.
Yeah, it's so many layers, like an onion, that we have to peel back because we don't want to leave out the victims as well. You know what I'm saying? They have their say. You know, I'm a victim of that. So, you know, I have to look at it from both sides, and I most definitely don't want to discard anyone's feeling, but the Department of Correction has a responsibility.
Right.
And this, hold on, this is him calling.
He's back.
All right. So let me just bring you up to date, 845-277-9250. We're talking to live Brother Hassan Shabazz, who's calling in from a state institution here in Virginia. We're talking about the hidden crisis, right, that's in Virginia prison, House Bill 5148, and some of the things that are going on, right, that we need to work toward prison reform, give these brothers the support that they need, give them the mentorship, right, and to provide that additional support that our brothers and sisters need both inside and when they return into community. We got to build stronger people, right? And the way that you do that is to do it collectively. Brother Hassan, are you back?
Yes, I'm here. I made it back.
All right, welcome.
I made
to
it
the
back.
Show. All right,
Well,
I'm going to turn you back over to Brother George,
ahead.
And then we'll go to question and answer.
Okay, cool.
I'm done, brother. I just would like, I told Sister Krista that we're going to get you back so that you could do a part two, because I can tell you got a wealth of information and you got a lot of facts, and I can tell that you was rushing to try to give us as much as you could. So we are going to bring you back. But for right now, I really would like for the people on the line to be able to ask you questions.
That'd be great, man.
All right.
Great.
All right. Let's go to the lines. Brother Hassan, hold still, right? Because I got to bring it in, right? Y'all know how I do this right here.
Okay.
Here we go. Oh, yeah. This is how we do it. All right. Oh, yeah. There it is. How about that, y'all? Sometimes it's like that. All right. Bring it now. If you got a question, come on, ask Brother Hassan. Bring it today. We got the brother live. We're doing it live right now and in color. Got the brother Hassan Shabazz here to answer your questions. We're going to the lines right now. Here is how it works. I'm going to call the last four of your number that's on the board. If you want to call in, 845-277-9250. I'm starting off with 7621. 7621, you're on live. Do you have a question or comment for Brother Shabazz today? 7621.
Yeah, peace.
Peace.
Peace. Yeah, my name is Infinite Allah. I'd like to thank my brothers and all of you for this opportunity to speak with him. Be seeing you soon, man.
Oh, man.
I do have
a question, though. Can't wait.
Yeah, we're going to get it together. But here's what I want to know. What are prisoners doing to address the present issues concerning the political, the politics surrounding incarceration?
Oh, okay. That's a wonderful question. Wonderful question.
Yeah, appreciate it.
And I can tell you,
thank you, brother,
from experience, what I see going on here right now in prison is that, especially with what just took place, with this governor's amendment, that guys are really striving to educate themselves about the political process, right? Because many of them had no idea that the governor even had the authority to amend the bill after the bill had been passed and was ready to go into effect. And I said, man,
wow.
I said, y'all need to learn a little bit more about what's going on with the politics that surround your conviction. Because I am a firm believer that if you don't know anything about the politics that govern you, that create the laws that govern you, then you will forever be a slave to those politics, no matter how free you think you might be, right?
True indeed.
Because then somebody can create a law that you have no knowledge of, that's in effect, and the next thing you know, you may be taken to jail in handcuffs because you violated something that you have no knowledge of, right?
Mm.
And so, like, we really want to strive to make sure that guys are aware and becoming more educated. It's what we call being a prisoner of conscience, right?
Mm.
Being more educated about the politics that surround your conviction. Another thing that guys are doing, I can tell you this, bro, is that they're being more active in civic engagement through writing and reaching out to their representatives, right? Many of them saw this as a slap in the face. So they are starting to write to their representatives, to their delegates, to their senators, and they're saying how disappointed that they are in what just took place with them. And there are a few guys that are doing that, and we're trying to encourage more and more guys to do that. And the other thing that I can tell you that guys are doing, which is very important, right, is that many guys are now encouraging their families to be more involved in the activism and the advocacy and showing up to the rallies and striving to be out there for everything that you know about us. We like to say that we don't have nothing going on about us without us being at the table, right? So if we can't be there, we want one of our family members to be there representing on our behalf. And then another thing is this. It's all about me. Like, for myself, I would say that I leave on Monday. And so what I strive to do is always keep brothers around me that I can pass the torch to. And so right here, right now, I have a brother of mine by the name of Sakande Hashim Matthews, who's a mentor. I'm the senior coordinator in the reentry community here. He's a mentor in this community right here, and I plan on leaving and passing the torch with him so that he can carry on in doing the work of making sure that we're involved in everything that has something to do with us. And so hold on for 1 second. I want him to introduce himself to everybody, if you don't mind, please. Hold on.
All right. Go right ahead, sir. Welcome to the show, brother.
Hashim Matthews. Thank you for having me. And I want to introduce my name, Sakande Hashim Matthews. I'm a mentor in this elder community in the reentry at Dillwyn. And right now I'm following along the steps of Brother Shabazz, man, Hassan Shabazz, man. He's paving the way for many of us and been passing on a lot of information that's resourceful for, you know, the benefit of the brothers coming back into society and making a difference. And a lot of young brothers that's in this community look up to us. I mean, as elders, that he's been incarcerated for 23 years, and so is myself. And it's a hard struggle sometimes, but at the same time, man, we in this for, it's like one for all for one. You know, and if anybody else going to reach out to our youth and deal with the brothers in the community, nobody is, because we are the community, you know.
That's right.
And what goes on in this community is what's going on out there in society, and vice versa.
Absolutely.
You know?
Thank you for your work, brother.
Absolutely. Definitely.
Yes, sir.
Thank you so much.
Yes, sir.
And we look forward to seeing you when you step out as well. All right, let's continue to move
yes,
it on.
Sir.
We're going to 9643. Before we go there, though, I've been telling y'all we need a political agenda. You got to understand these politics and how they work. And you got to create a system that's going to support and insulate us that we'll be able to navigate the system when moves are made. If you don't understand the political process that's working around you, the system is going to work you, and we need to eliminate that. All right, Brother Hassan, you there?
Yeah, I'm right here. Yes, sir.
All right, we're going over to okay. 9643. 9643, but you're exactly right about that. 9643, you're on live. Do you have a question or comment for Brother Hassan Shabazz?
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the show.
Good afternoon. How you doing?
Thank you. I'm doing well. Thank you. I'm calling, and my question is, what do you feel is DOC's responsibility in regard to the amended law and its effect on prisoners?
Oh, now that's a great question. Wonderful question. Okay, thank you. Thank you for the question. Okay, well, what I would say is this. DOC's responsibility. With the amendment to this law that took place, and me understanding the conditions of prison, right, I believe this, that the wardens should be outraged by what the legislature has just done, right? Because what happened was that they actually gave something to guys, and many of them wasn't even expecting it. They didn't even ask for it, right? And they gave something to them. And for 3 months, these guys were thinking that they were getting ready to come home. And the crazy thing about it is that they don't believe that that's going to have an effect on the mental health of the guys in here when you take that away from them, right? And so the warden should be outraged. Brian Moran and everybody else that's on the high levels of the Department of Corrections should be outraged, because what it's going to do in the long haul is it's going to make the DOC facilities more dangerous, right?
Mm.
There are guys already talking about, oh, man, you took that away from me. Man, I was going home in 2024. Now I'm going home in 2035, right?
Wow.
And so there are a lot of guys out there who are feeling like just depraved, man, and just trodden upon and stepped on. And so DOC has to start to be more vocal about what it is that's needed within this system, right? Because a lot of the time the legislatures, they legislate, but they're not active into what's going on here in the Department of Corrections when it comes down to corrections. Right, and so with that being said, the DOC must step up to the plate in that way. Also, DOC must understand that nothing in here works without the prisoner, right? If the prisoner is not here, then DOC is not here. Everything in DOC operates off of prisoners. Prisoners work so that they can get good time, right?
All
prisoners
right.
do Tell jobs it. In here. They do jobs in here that you will have to pay people thousands and thousands of dollars, right, to do the jobs that prisoners do in here. And so you don't show your appreciation in no way, shape, form, or fashion for all of the work and everything that prisoners do in here to keep the prison working. The DOC, the prison does not work without the prisoner, period. And so when guys are starting to say, man, I don't care nothing about working because you not giving me nothing to work for. Like, why in the world should I help you fix this pipe? Why in the world should I help you do this or do that? No, pay a contractor to come in here and do that, right? No. Guys do that because they live in here and they're working, striving to earn good time. Now that you take that away, what does a guy have to work for? So the DOC has to be much more responsible as it pertains to the well-being of their prisoners. Look,
true.
I would say this. The DOC mission statement says that this is a learning and a healing environment, right? That's what they say. They say that rehabilitation and reform and reentry starts on the day that you enter into a DOC facility. Now, I have yet to see that, right? The only place close to that was the self-governing community that they had at Augusta, which I was a part of, and many other brothers that I know that were there were a part of, who created their own community, right? And then we was allowing guys who had more than 6 to 18 months, right, into the community so that they can learn the skills that they need to go back into society. And we was doing that 5 years out. In DOC as it stands right now, if a guy is not 6 to 18 months, he don't see no reentry. So what you're telling me is you want a guy to be in here for 18 years, let's say.
Wow.
And at the end of that 18 years, when he gets down to a year, you're going to put him in intensive reentry and expect to reverse all of the garbage that's been put into him for the past 17 years. And
wow.
He's going to do that in a year? He's going to do that in 6 months? He can't do that in 6 months. If it's not for the mentors in here to pull that guy up and say, listen, man, your reentry don't stop here. When you get out, you got to continue with this. When you get out, you got to keep going. Don't fall back into your old habits. Don't fall back into your old ways, right? It's
right.
going to take you longer than what you have to reverse what's been put into you for the past however many years you've been in here, man. And so, like, we let's not fool ourselves into thinking that this is some utopia and this reentry is just the end-all, be-all, and this is going to help everything. I'm a senior coordinator in the reentry community, and I can tell you right now that the way that the program stands and the way that it works right now, man, if it ain't for the guys in here working to reform themselves, ain't no program going to do it, right?
Mm.
Ain't no
wow.
four-step program, no six-month programming, no 12-month programming. That's not going to cut it, man. Reentry got to start as soon as guys come into the prison until the day that they
wow.
leave. And I don't care how
right.
much time they have.
And that's why
that's
why I say victims should be outraged as well. Because if you're releasing somebody after a certain amount of time of doing, after doing their time, what progress have they made? That should be the victim's question to the Department of Corrections.
Mm.
True.
Mm-hmm.
True. All right, well, let's get another
True.
Call in. Let's go on over to 1144. I'm calling last for your number 1144. You're up next. You're live. Do you have a question or comment for Brother Hassan or Sister Kristen?
Yeah.
Right, in the meantime.
Okay.
Let's keep right going, Brother Hassan. So you talked about rehabilitation, right? And hopefully we'll be able to get that call in. Now, I know you said there are individuals and their groups in there working to help each other, right, to continue to work through the process. And so that process, what did it do for you personally?
Oh, well, it's wonderful. It's great. You know, peer support is one of the greatest things. I think the fortunate thing for me is that I really feel like that I could have been released years and years ago with what I had within me to be
mm-hmm.
able to bring that to the people in society. It's unfortunate that I had to stay in prison for so long because there was no avenue for showing that I was rehabilitated through parole or anything of that nature. And so I just had to finish my time. Like, I'm bringing all of my time to the door. I didn't get any extraordinary good time, right? They didn't give me anything besides the 4.5 days that I earn every month that I was incarcerated, right?
Okay,
and so,
Brother Hassan, let me hold you right there for 1 second.
Okay.
1144,
sure.
Are you there?
Yes, sir. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh,
welcome to
me?
The show. Do you have a question or comment?
Yes,
for
sir. That's
all right,
Brother Hassan. This is Brother Willie. Brother Hassan,
hey,
can you hear me?
Brother Willie, what's going on, man? All right.
I'm trying by the grace of God and the ancestors. I just wanted to present a question to you if you haven't already answered. How are the incarcerated brothers and sisters affected by the House Bill 5148 amendment?
Oh, well, okay. I think that we touched on it
okay.
a little bit, but there's something that I can add to that, though. There's something that I can add to what I was speaking about before, is that mental health is such a crucial thing here in prison, right? We really need to understand what's going on with mental health. When you enter into these doors, you enter in as an MH0, which is a mental health zero, right? If you haven't had any previous history of mental health when you were out on the street, right? And if you can exist in a prison population as long as you're a mental health 1 or 2, provided that you have some type of counseling and medication. Any mental health 3, 4, or 5 has to go to Marion, right? That's the only place that they can exist as far as within the prison system. And so they are severely mentally ill and so forth. What I've seen happen and with this House bill is I saw the mental health of guys being...
You have 1 minute remaining.
And in many ways, when they brought the psychologists around, they knew that it might have a mental health effect upon guys, right? But the sad thing is that a sick mind doesn't necessarily know that it's sick. It has to be properly diagnosed. And so if these guys are not receiving the diagnosis, the counseling sessions and things like that that they need, then we don't know when we have a walking time bomb on our hands, because they haven't necessarily done whatever is needed in order to evaluate this person. And so something has to be done to say that about mental health. And that's just not about this bill. That's about the entirety of a person's stay in prison. And I'll call back and I'll finish elaborating on that particular question if I can.
Okay. We got about 4.5 minutes left. So yeah, we're gonna have to kind of wind it down. But definitely call back.
Okay.
And Sister Krista
will
give final comments from you, then we'll get the brother back in for his final comments, and then we'll wrap up for today. This has been a great show, right? And again, if you listen to the tenets of the NAAEA, you can hear it right here and what's going on with these brothers in the prison system, right? You got to have a political agenda, and you have to have education, but you also have to understand the importance of mental health. Sister Krista, right, do you have final comments before we wrap up and you can get him back in? This brother is powerful, right, y'all. This is the work that we need to do. All right, Sister Krista, final comments.
I just say, you know, voting is a must, and educating the community, you know what I'm saying? We have to educate our community on the laws that govern us.
You got that right. You got that right. And you see how they could just change the law or the rules or slip something in or slide something by, and then everything changes. You got to understand how your vote matters, and you got to participate, right? That's the way we make change, is that we participate. All right, Sister Krista, let me know if we can get Brother Hassan back in. If not, let me slide on over to Brother George for final comments from him, and then hopefully we can end it up with Brother Hassan. Brother George, this has been a great show, man. And I do want to thank you for orchestrating this kind of conversation today. But final comments from you, brother.
Well, yes. I really have been really, truly educated. And I would like for Hassan to make his final comments if he's back.
Okay.
You know,
great, he's here.
Okay.
Brother Hassan,
I'm here.
It away.
Yes, sir. Oh, wow. Well, listen, first and foremost, I just want to thank you, brothers, for having me on today, man, for giving me an opportunity to be able to speak to the people. I believe that you know, everything that happens, it happens in synchronicity toward the ultimate end and goal of you know, liberation. I do believe, as Martin Luther King said, that the arc of the universe bends toward justice, and that justice will not sleep forever. And so, no matter how long I've been in here, I realized that I was only in here so that I could come out there and do the work that I'm now about to do. And so for you all to allow me an opportunity to set the stage for what's about to happen, I just say tune in. For everybody tuning in, I want to say thank you for everything that you know, that you proceed to do, that you have done, and that you will do in the future. I thank you for lending your ears, and know that this will not be the last time that you hear from me or FOE or VAPJN or CERN or any other organizations that I'm associated with, because there's a lot of work to be done, and somebody got to take the weight, you know. And so with that being said, I just want to say thank you once again. I appreciate you all. Shout out to everybody out there listening. Shout out to all my brothers and sisters in the prison, striving to do better, to be better, and most undoubtedly, we're going to receive better, right? And that's what it is, because we believe that we put out there, what we put out there is what we get back. And so that's all we're striving to do, man. Positivity, and I appreciate y'all, man. Thank you for this. It's been very empowering to me. I appreciate it.
All right. All right. Thank you, brother. Freedom over everything.
Thank
brother
you.
Hassan, Shabazz, and the next time we talk to you, you're going to be over here with us continuing to do the work of empowering our people. It's all about African-American empowerment, but it's about human empowerment as we continue to motivate and empower ourselves to become the best that we can be. So, brother, thank you so much. Thank you, Sister Krista. Thank you, Brother George. And again, you got to do the work. Whether you're in or out, listen, brothers and sisters, you have to do the work of committing to working on yourself. Work on yourself. Get better. Do the work and continue to love on each other like never before. Again, I'm Marvin Rome. We'll talk to you next week. It's all about our empowerment. Peace and blessings. Oh, yeah.
To read. Oh, to read. To read. The unreachable.
Oh, yeah. That's how we do it.